I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Let's see. What was I? Was I don't even know how old I was then.
You were 33.
30-something.
In 2006, James McVeigh was a man with a plan.
So 33 years old, I was working at Bennigan's as a bartender, kind of doing a little bit of management shifts. That was going to be my long-term goal, was to be a manager with the preference of eventually owning my own restaurant. So that's kind of where I was, just, you know, I guess living the life.
On February 20th, 2006, James was driving home from his shift at Bennigan's in Fort Worth, Texas.
And the weather was bad, but it wasn't terrible. It was a cold. It doesn't really get icy cold in Texas often.
Right.
So it was just different. I grew up in Denver, so I think I have a pretty good idea of driving in the snow and stuff like that. But when it gets bad down here, it's not snow. It's just ice. And I don't care where you grew up at or where you're from or stuff like that, but driving on ice is just almost impossible for no matter who you are. But I just took what I knew from living in Colorado, just drive slow, don't make erratic movements, don't slam on the brakes. So when I was driving home that night, I didn't feel any angst or like, I was like, if I just go slow on the highway, I'll be fine, because I lived about 10 miles from my job.
To get home, James had to take I-20 to I-35. Which connect with multi-level overpasses that criss and cross in this tangled octopus web.
So a highway connects to a highway, connects to a highway, connects to a highway. Well, when you have three or four highways connecting at the same time, you can't run those on and off ramps at the same level.
Right.
So what they do is they build up. And going from I-20 to I-35, there's a just an off ramp. But granted, this off ramp is considerably high. So I was coming around the corner, and as I did, there was headlights facing me.
This was a one-way road, as most ramps are, and this car was facing the wrong way.
And I was like, oh, this isn't good. Somebody probably spun out, because you see it all the time. Happens often here. So I slowed down tremendously, probably went like 5 miles an hour past them, rolled down my windows, and just kind of looked to see what the status was and stuff like that as I drove past. And their windows, one of their windows was down and they were screaming. And I was like, and it was a lady. I can tell it was at least one lady. And I was like, oh man.
There were actually two sisters and one of their young sons in the car. James drove a little further just to get off the ramp.
And I was like, all right, what do I do here? What's the best situation? What's the best way to do this?
Yeah.
I was like, well, there's no cars. It's probably 2:30 in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning. So there's very little traffic that time of day. Anyways, I was like, oh, I need to go check on her just to make sure she's okay. So I got in my car, kind of held on to the barrier wall, walking back up to the car because it was all icy. And I get up there, and then there was two ladies in the car. They're both pretty hysterical. They were scared. I think they're backwards on the highway. I'm not sure if the airbags had deployed or not, but the one lady had some blood on her mouth, and I was the driver, And the passenger was just screaming a bunch. And I was like, oh dear. I said, are you guys all right? And they just really couldn't speak to me clearly because they were just really hysterical. And I was like, do you want me to call 911? And she held up her phone. So I thought that meant she had called 911.
Right.
But I wasn't really, there wasn't good enough communication to be clear what was going on. So I sat up for a minute and this diesel started coming around the 18-wheeler started coming around the corner and it just started sliding. And I was like, excuse my language, but I was like, oh shit, this isn't good.
This is Live to Tell, the podcast where I talk to some of the bravest people who have been through the most horrifying things and lived to tell the tale. I'm Caitlin Van Maul. Okay, the diesel truck was a bit of a fake out.
So I started walking back towards my car and the diesel just slid past me. And it just went on down the road and just kept on going. I was like, oh my God, that was crazy. And so I sat there for a second. I was like, well, what do I do here? And I went back up to the car and I said, hey, I'm going to call 911 and then I'm going to go back to my car. So I called 911 and then I started walking back to my car. And the 911 operator was like, just asking me like simple questions. Where are you at? What's the situation? I said, well, this car's backwards on the highway. I'm just out talking to them. What should I do?
Yeah.
And they're like, well, you should go get in safety. How are the ladies doing? And I said, I don't know exactly. I know one of them was bleeding from her mouth. And I said, but I think one of them's pregnant. And they're like, well, how bad is it for her? And I said, let me go back up and ask. So I walked back up to the car again. And I tried to talk to him again. I said, hey, I'm on the phone with 911. Do you guys need help? Like, what's the situation? And it was just a lot of screaming again. I said, just bring an ambulance. I said, because it's really hard for me to talk to them. I think they're just scared to death. Cars keep coming by. They keep sliding. We need to get the highway shut down at least or something like that. I don't remember exactly what my words were, but it was something to that effect.
While James was still up on the overpass by the stopped car.
And then a pickup truck came and started sliding. And I was like, I said, oh shit, here we go again. And I started kind of trying to walk fast past the car. And that time I heard the truck hit the car. And I was like, oh crap, it's really close to me. And then it hit me.
Not only did the truck hit James, the impact threw him off the overpass 70 feet to the ground.
And I remember just going off the side of the highway and being like, like I'm dead. Because I know how far down it is.
Yeah.
And I just remember thinking, I'm dead. And then I was on the ground and I'm like, what's going on here? Like, how am I on the ground? I don't remember hitting the ground, but I was awake. I was kind of I might get a little emotional here. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
it's kind of,
okay.
I haven't talked about this in a while. I was laying on like the side of a hill where my face was below the rest of my body. So I was kind of pointed downhill.
Uh-huh.
And I knew where I was and I was like, how did I get down here and how am I okay? Because I didn't hurt.
To be clear, James was not okay. He was definitely severely injured. He just didn't feel the pain yet.
But I was really warm and it was really cold. And I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, I can see my breath. My mouth felt super, super hot. Like I felt like my mouth was running and I couldn't figure out why my mouth was running, like dripping. I was just kind of, I was very confused with what was going on. Cause yeah. Like I said, I thought I was dead. And then I was like, okay, I'm in a bad spot.
He means bad spot, figuratively and literally.
Yeah, I'm in an area where there's nothing. There's no businesses, and I'm in like a little ravine where there's a creek down there. So there's no people are going to be down there. And I was like, I need to figure out how to get help. So I tried to get up, and when I went to push myself up, I pushed with my forearms instead of my hands. And I was very confused by that. I was like, why? What's going on here? It's pretty graphic. Sorry about the
This
is going to be graphic.
I'm used to hearing it, but it's still gross, you know?
Well, that's good. That's good. That means you haven't become numb to it yet.
Yeah.
So my wrist broke through the inside of both of my forearms. So when I was pushing up with like my midarm. And I was like, oh, that's definitely not good. And I was like, okay, I need to figure out how to like wiggle my lower body. And I could feel my left leg, but I looked back at my right leg and it was like a slinky inside my jeans. And I was like, oh, that isn't good either. And so I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And so I started kind of screaming the best I could. I just started screaming, like, help me, I think is what I keep saying over and over again, help me, help me. But come to find out, my jaw was all broken. Like my upper teeth broke all out and broke the whole upper jaw. My bottom jaw came through my bottom of my chin right here. It was just bleeding so bad. And that's what all the warmth was that I was feeling. But again, nothing hurt, which is just, it's the craziest thing in the world. I'd never broken a bone before in my life. And I was like, this shit all hurt tremendously.
Right.
but nothing hurts. I don't know if the ladies got out of the car, but I heard the ladies talking. And so I don't know how I heard them talking, but I heard the ladies talking as I was screaming, help me. But it wasn't very loud. Whatever I was screaming, there was not a lot of decibels coming out of.
Jaw the way that it was, it was probably a little hard to.
Yeah, it's so, but I could hear them, but they thought I was a homeless person. They were like, don't worry about that. That's a homeless person down there just causing problems. Because they didn't know where I went. I guess they thought I walked back down to my car.
So no one knew that James fell from the overpass, which meant no one would be looking for him or could get him the help he desperately needed. But then James heard a voice.
But then I hear somebody talking to me. I'm like, this is crazy. Like, I don't know how somebody's talking to me.
Yeah.
But like maybe 2 to 3 feet away from me when I fell off the bridge, I had my phone on me and my phone fell next to me. And it was an old flip phone and it actually stayed open.
Again, this is 2006. Wow.
And so they could hear me screaming. And once I stopped screaming, I could hear them talking to me. And they're like, James, is that you? And I'm like, yes. They're like, where are you at?
James, we have an ambulance on the way to you, okay?
Oh, shit. The car knocked me off the bridge.
The car knocked you off the bridge?
I'm like, I got hit by a car, and I'm under the bridge. Well, I think that the guy who I originally was talking to didn't understand what I was, because I wasn't clear at all. When I'm talking, it's as mumbled as it gets. He kept saying, you're on the bridge. And I said, no, I'm under the bridge. And I kept saying, I'm underneath the bridge. Send help. I need help. And somebody else came to help him. And it was a lady that was on, then started talking to me. And I think she might've known the area a little bit better.
James, did you land on another bridge or are you in the grass?
Oh, this hurts so bad.
James, talk to me, okay? Are you in the grass?
What?
Are you in grass?
Yeah.
You're in the grass?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm getting help to you. Stay with me, okay?
I can't hear you.
I'm getting help to you. Stay with me.
But even with this reassurance, James had no idea how they would find him under this massive overpass. In the dark.
The major hospital in the area is probably 6 or 7 miles from where we're at. I know which way they got to come down. They go the opposite way of where I'm at. And then I start freaking out again. I'm like, you're going the wrong way.
Yeah.
I had never been down on the road by where I was.
Right.
And I didn't know how to get there. And you can't get there from the way I would think you would get there. So they were actually going to get to a road to get to this service road to get to me.
Right.
They got, I could see them pull up next to me on the road. They come running out with a stretcher. It was two guys. And they just kind of looked at me like, oh, you're in some trouble. And the one guy said, hey, I need to straighten your leg out before we put you on the stretcher.
Can you describe your leg again?
It just looked zigzaggy in my jeans. It's all like
squished.
Squished together.
Yeah.
And I'm like that's not
bag of rocks.
Yeah, I don't know how to describe it. It was just very it was like if you dropped a pair of pants on the ground, that's what it looked like, not with something inside of them.
Right.
You're like, what, there's supposed to be something in there that would fill out that jean, and there's not something in there right now. They put the collar around my neck, and then they rolled me over, and he's like, this is going to hurt more than anything's ever hurt in your life. I don't know what he put on my leg. He pulled my leg to straighten it and put an air cast on it, and that hurt. That hurt like I was screaming I don't know how to explain it, but I was screaming pretty bad. Then they take me up to the ambulance, and they get me in the ambulance. I knew I wasn't breathing well. I kept choking a bunch. And so I guess they had to do a tracheotomy in the ambulance, which is something that I guess I've been told that they don't often do.
Yeah.
And I remember being flustered going, oh, man, because I saw something about if you get a tracheotomy, like the scar never goes away. It's always big and it's right here in your neck. And I was like, oh, my gosh, now I got this big scar. I'm like, I remember getting to the hospital and they like a bunch of doctors came around me. And I don't know how I communicated this with them also, but I told them they couldn't do anything to me until they got a hold of my mother. They're like, we need to put you in. I was like, you can't do anything until you get a hold of my mom. And so they, I guess they called and got a hold of her. And then they came back and they said, we talked to your mom. We told her not to come up here, which for safety reasons, because the ice is so terrible. I mean, what good does it do to have more people get hurt and stuff like that?
Yeah.
So, and I was like, okay, you did your part. I do what you got to do now.
We'll be right back.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
James doesn't remember a lot from the days after the accident.
Well, they weren't sure how my melon was going to, I call it my melon. My melon was going to be because I had such a pretty dramatic head injury because I definitely hit face first.
Yeah.
Breaking my jaw and my mouth here. And then it broke my skull all the way around, broke my facial bones in here. They had to reconstruct all that. I don't know if they thought I was going to die, but I don't know they thought I was going to end up good. Maybe somewhere in between. I had just wires and tubes and everything all over my face. My left leg, it wasn't in a cast, but it was in a Velcro brace that kept my leg perfectly straight. And then my left arm was from the elbow surgery and the wrist surgeries and stuff like that. It had metal bars that went across the length of from my wrist to my elbow that protruded from the skin probably 6 inches.
Yeah, so it's almost like one of those halos that
yeah,
people
something
get
like that,
but for
my arm.
Your arm. Yeah,
right. And then my arm was in a a cast that you'll see, like people who have like ACL surgeries or something like that with the little metal spinners on the side. And then my right arm was in a cast. I believe it was in a cast. It was in something. And I'm not sure if it was a cast or just a plaster thing. They had to wire my mouth shut. So I don't know if I was awake during that time. I mean, I remember some of it, but
yeah, or if it's just like a drug haze.
Yeah, I don't know how it equates to being cognitive of the situation. I just remember going to like different testing things, going to a CT scan, going to an MRI, going to a different room to do this, being in a surgical room, going to a different surgical room. And then I started to remember people being there, my parents, my friends, stuff like that. I just start to remember them being there and remember what a bad situation I was in because I just couldn't do anything. I couldn't do anything.
And that included talking, because his jaw was wired shut. Not being able to communicate was really hard on James, until someone finally came up with a solution.
And then I don't remember who came up to me and said that they have like a board with letters on it, and they would give me a pencil that I could hold in my cast in my right arm, and I could point to letters, and they would figure out what I was kind of saying by me pointing to letters. So that kind of made it way better, if that makes sense. Because at least being able to talk to people makes it, or communicate what it is you need or what you're feeling, or trying to figure out even what happened.
Yeah,
I'm still trying to understand what ended up happening and stuff like that. So
what is the first conversation you remember having with the doctors about how bad your injuries were? I mean, it's fairly obvious if you're in like the big cast, but like.
All right. So it's hard to describe because everyone has their own specialty. So you don't have like one doctor. You have, you know, I had an EMT doctor. I had my arm doctor. I had my leg doctor. I had just all the different people that would come in there. So they were just focused on, my job is to get this part better for you. I remember ever thinking like, oh my God, this is the worst scenario in the world. My parents are pretty positive. They're like, they're making you better. You know, we're going to get through this. We're going to figure it out. We're going to, that kind of stuff. And I've got a tremendously positive attitude, I think, because of them. I kind of came to terms with, they said they can fix some stuff. So whatever they can fix, they fix. And whatever they don't, we just figure out how to get through, keep going forward after that. I knew I was still pretty messed up, but I was like, man, I wish you would have got pictures. I wanted to see what I looked like, because they kept saying your head was like the size of a basketball. I was like, what? They're like, yeah, your head was like the size of a basketball. It's like, how's that possible? Like, yeah. We don't know.
As injured as he was, James was really not interested in sticking around the hospital.
So it was funny. So I lived pretty close to the hospital. I lived about 2 miles. And depending on my state of mind with how many drugs I guess I had in me, I kept thinking, I'm just going to go home. Like, I feel fine. I just want to go home. Like, I kept wanting to go to work the next day. And they're like, you can't do anything. Like, you can't talk. Like, no, I feel fine. So I kept trying to get out of bed. And I would fall on the ground because I had no support with my leg. And I kept pulling my PICC line out. So they ended up, my mom allowed them to handcuff me to the bed, which I was pretty mad at for a while, because I just, the drugs make you feel fine. And I just, I guess I didn't grasp how bad it was. If you were sensible, you would know you're not going to work the next day.
In the hospital, James lost a ton of weight. Well, not a ton exactly.
Because I ate all my food through a tube for, I don't know, 6 weeks or something like that. And I ended up losing probably 40 pounds, 50 pounds. So I weighed 100 pounds when I was getting ready to leave the rehab place. And I'm 6 foot. I was 6 foot. Somehow I grew almost 3 inches. So I'm like almost 6'3 now. Nobody really knows, can explain how it happens. But I was 6 foot my whole entire life.
Like, if that crushing of that one leg, then it just kind of like got stretched out. But it would only make sense if one leg was longer than the other, you know?
Right. Some of the doctors have said it was because I laid down for so long that it helped my discs start to like
separate from not having so much compression on it. Cause after you get to, like, when you start to get older, just years of compression makes you shrink. They said that since you laid down for so long, it might have eased up a lot, but I still haven't shrunk any. Mm. Still 6'2" and a half or something like that. And it's the craziest thing. Well, my friends, all my short friends would always joke, so all I got to do is fall off the bridge and I grow 3 inches, right? I guess so. If you want to try it, you can always try it.
We here at Live to Tell, and by we, I mean me, Caitlin, are officially against jumping off great heights just to make yourself taller. Getting those extra inches wasn't all James was curious about.
So I stayed in the hospital for I think 3 weeks in intensive care. And then they sent me to a rehab facility for, I think, 2 months or something. But when I was in there, I asked about the 911 tape. And I was like, hey, do they have a tape of it? And mom's like, what? I'm like, yeah. I was like, I want to hear, because I'm kind of not sure about my story, like what happened. And I know I was on the phone the whole time. And it would be interesting just to hear the whole scenario. And so she called them to ask about it. And the lady she talked to was the lady who was on the phone with me.
Oh.
And she asked, mom asked, is there a way we can get a copy of the tape? And the lady's like, ma'am, you don't ever want to hear that.
I know I've already played a bit of the call, but it's 20 minutes long. And to give you an idea of what the bulk of it sounds like.
Hello?
So, yeah, hard to listen to. Back to the conversation between James's mom and the 911 operator.
And she's like, no, it's not for me. It's for my son. And she said, he lived through it? And she said, yeah. And he's like, oh, my God. She's like, don't tell him not to listen to it. She's like, it's horrific. And, you know, but I was able to listen to it and separate myself from, like, it's almost like it's a movie or something.
Yeah.
I don't understand how. I listened to it. There was a gentleman named Alex Branch who wrote an article that was in the paper. He did a couple of them. And he wanted to listen to the tape. And we made it probably, I don't know, 5-6 minutes into the tape. And he was crying. He's like, I got to get out of here. I can't listen. He's like, we're good. I've heard enough.
Oh, gosh.
I was like, it's pretty crazy. You want to help somebody who's screaming. And anyone who's a good-natured person, just being in there hurts your body to not be able to help the person.
Yeah.
Especially if you know it's real.
Yeah. Do you think maybe because you knew you obviously lived?
Yeah.
helped you?
I would think he would know too, because I'm like, you're talking to me. But
yeah.
But I think he didn't understand that I went through it. And so I kind of knew it wasn't in pain when I was there. I knew it's a very strange thing what your body can do. Like, I try to put myself, if it was my brother or my mom or something like that, how would my insides feel if I heard them in agony like that? So
yeah.
I know that when I'm screaming like that, I'm more scared than I am hurt.
Did the driver of the truck stop?
I believe he stopped. I don't know that for a fact. I believe he stopped. I never met him. He was on his way. This is just a story I remember hearing. He was on his way to work. He didn't do anything wrong. I mean, it wasn't, I would never like blame him for what happened. It's just unlucky. He's getting a situation where, you know, if headlights are facing you, who knows if he might have pushed his brakes too fast or something like that and started spinning. And I mean, he couldn't hit me if he wanted to try. You just don't have that much control on the ice and stuff like that. So I don't ever blame him. I've never had ill will against him or anything like that, because it just, like I said, it's just an accident.
James eventually healed enough to be released from the hospital, and he was eager to get the rehab process going.
I've always been a real busy bee. I got to move. So then I finally was able to get to the point to where they would let me get out of the bed and get into my wheelchair by myself. And I would just wheel myself around the rehab center, mm-hmm. pushing myself backwards with my left leg because it was good.
I was going to say, with your hands, how did you do it?
I couldn't do it. They would just sit on the side of the wheelchair and I would just steer with my left leg. And They had like nicknames for me and all kinds of stuff like that, because they just thought I was the craziest person in the world. I was like, I'm just not going back to that bed. Tired of the bed.
Yeah.
Then when I got home, it was a little more difficult at home, just because you're in a smaller, little bit more confined space. It's not set up for
just zooming around in a wheelchair.
Yeah. There's a certain amount of rehab time you can do where they'll be like, hey, you get an hour today. And I was always like, I need 4 hours, I need 5 hours, I need 6 hours. I said, can I just do it by myself? You just tell me what I need to do and you can leave, and I'll just don't take me back to my room, because I can get myself back to my room. And so I would go do extra rehab in the rehab facility, and I don't remember what I was trying to do, stretching. I was probably making stuff up just so I didn't have to go back to the room. I wasn't there to mess around. They all really appreciated it. They were always on my side and trying to, you know, hey, we see you're doing this. You know, you should try to do this because it's your next step. Mm-hmm. There was a lady, her name was Kim. She almost ended up being like my surrogate mom or older sister or whatever you want to call her. But she was phenomenal. She taught me through it, and she taught me through the other parts, the hard parts, the what are you going to do next in life? Where's your, you know, this is where you're at now. Where do you want to be? How hard do you want to work? She was great for kind of all of that stuff. She wasn't just there to help me with my fingers and my wrists and my elbows. She was there to kind of see what my mental state was at the same time. And it was easy for her. I think I'm a pretty good communicator. And so I think it was just easy for her to see that it's good to push me. Because when you think you're pushing me, I'm going to push myself harder and you're going to get better results out of it.
But it wasn't all work and no play.
When I moved to Texas from Colorado in 1995, and I started going to the Texas Rangers. I've always been a big baseball fan. I started going to the Rangers games, and opening day is always a very big thing to go to. And so I had been to every one since I had been there. And I was like, I'm not breaking the streak. I'm going. But this was like 2 months after the accident. And the doctor's like, you're not going. I'm like, I'm going. Yeah, if I'm walking myself or something. And my friends were like, we're going to come bust him out of here if we need to. He wants to go to the baseball game. We're taking him to the baseball game. And so they worked it out with the rehab center. Like, they sent a bus for me or something like that to come get me. And they took me out to the game for the day, which was either, I had no business being there whatsoever. I was freezing. I was uncomfortable. Like, you know, I was miserable the entire time, but just the fact that I actually got to get out of the facility was amazing, and got to be part of the day was amazing, and how much my friends even fought for me. They were like, he wants to go, he's gonna go. So that was cool. So I had a great support system. My friends would stay, a couple of my friends stayed overnight the whole time. They just talked to me, or I was always a night person because I was in the restaurant industry.
Right.
So going to bed at 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock in the morning wasn't new to me.
Sure.
So I'd stay up all night and there was nothing to do. So the friends, they'd just hang out with me and stuff like that, which was pretty nice. I had a really good support system.
Even with this support system and determination, James did struggle mentally with the aftermath of the accident. I mean, it sounds like you were super positive and you did your rehab and you did extra rehab, but were there any dark times?
I would probably say that I started drinking more than I had drank in the past.
Hmm.
And it was probably a bad mix of drinking and because I was on painkillers. And I think it was an avoidance. I don't know, try to be normal, but you're not normal. I don't know how to categorize that. It was probably wasn't the best thing I should have been doing, but it was a way kind of to get through, because the pain's intense and it's just something you can't. It's crazy that it doesn't hurt when it happens, but it hurts afterwards and for a long period of time. And like, it still hurts today. It's exhausting. It makes you really tired. So you kind of look for where you can get to where it doesn't hurt, where you don't feel it all the time. And that might have been going to my own little mental play, going and seeing my own counselor.
We'll be right back.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
With the extent of his injuries and a long rehab journey, James's dad moved back to Texas to take care of him.
My father moved down to Texas, and he lived with me in my house for, I believe it was 2.5 years, might have been 3.
Wow.
Helping me through rehab, doing stuff with his work and stuff like that. He unfortunately had had some, he had had a DUI in Denver that he didn't fulfill what he was supposed to fulfill when he moved down to take care of me. He thought it was more important to come take care of me.
Eventually, James's dad had to go back to Denver to settle his legal situation. But then, years later,
unfortunately, he ended up getting cancer.
James worked it out with his boss at the time so that he could take care of his dad.
So I spent a lot of time up there with my father. Kind of, it was interesting because he helped me for so much in the previous 10 years. And then I was kind of returning the favor, taking care of him and stuff like that. And unfortunately, he passed away. But we got to spend a lot of time together. And it was interesting because when my parents got divorced when we were young, we grew apart tremendously. And so between my accident and his accident, that 10 years really brought us back together, which is kind of a cool...
Silver lining.
Yeah.
James was working hard to get his strength and mobility back. But there was a problem that wasn't going to be fixed with rehab.
There was a young man who was at JPS Hospital who was a student in the ENT department. And when my jaw broke, I didn't have my front 5 teeth, but my jaw ripped out and all that stuff. But he was like, I'm going to make it my job to get that all fixed for you. I'm going to get you some teeth. I'm going to get you some implants and repair your jaw and do that kind of stuff. And who knows how much that cost to get all this stuff done. So he started doing it, helped out like the surgical part, and they removed bone from my hip to build me a new jaw. And I appreciate that because who knows if you start from so far behind, you don't have teeth and your fingers don't work and your hands don't work. And I just can't imagine how much harder it would have been to get a job. And the advantages they gave to my disadvantages is huge.
Especially because James was in no position to work for a long time.
I qualified for disability after like a year, which is crazy. But then they paid me, they paid me to get better, which I appreciate to no end. But the money you get is just nothing. There's no, I was getting like, I think $725 a month or something like that. And I was like, I just can't live on this. I can't do anything with this money. I couldn't pay my bills. I couldn't do anything with it. So my friends would have an annual golf tournament for me to help get a little bit more money just to help me pay, whether it was going to rehab or it's $15 a time or something like this, that $700 goes quick when you're paying $10-$15 every time you go anywhere. You still got to eat. I had to have a cell phone. There's just things you just have to have, and they just cost money. So they would have a golf tournament for me.
The golf tournament ran for 3 years. James had also made some good connections while working at Bennigan's. And one of the old executives there was branching out and starting his own restaurant.
And he knew I wasn't working. He asked if I would come consult for him for like 6 months. So it gave me a chance to make some money. Like at this point in time, I didn't have any teeth in the front of my mouth. I was super skinny. My hands were really contracted. And I really appreciate the guy for bringing me out there and treating me like a really, just like a normal person. Like yeah. he saw me as the person before, not the person that I was standing in front of him.
Yeah.
And I really respect him for that. So I worked for him for 6 months and we opened a restaurant together. And then one of the guys who originally did one of the newspaper stories on me did where is this person now story.
This is the same guy who listened to the 911 call with James.
And a gentleman that's in Fort Worth that does a lot of charity stuff saw the story in the paper and got in touch with the people who were doing the golf tournament. And he donated some money to really help. And he also said, when you're looking for work, come talk to me. It was maybe 8 months later after that, I went to meet him. His sister, I don't want to say took me on as a project or something like that, but she really wanted to help me.
Yeah.
And so she was like, maybe you should go back to school. We'll pay for you to go to school, which I appreciated a ton, but that didn't help me pay my bills. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I can't live on $700. I mean, even if you pay for my school, I can't do it. And then I also, most schoolwork is done on a computer, and this all sounds like excuses and stuff like that, but my fingers don't work.
James's hands were in a loose fist most of his time in the hospital, and sitting in that position for so long caused contractures, which are the tightening of muscles or tendons to the point where stretching out his hand fully wasn't possible. So he doesn't have the dexterity to type for school or work.
There was a great doctor there that tried to fix the contractures where they go in and they take the I guess it's the ligaments that contract. So they try to stretch the ligaments out. And they did a couple of surgeries where they stretched them out and then they sew them above your knuckles. It's interesting to see kind of how the ligaments go around your knuckle over the top and then come underneath. And that's how you get the kind of that motion.
Uh-huh.
But every time they did the surgery, the ligaments kept ripping. And so they would go back to how they were. And then they tried it again and then it ripped again. So they finally, I was like, just forget it. I'm tired of being surgery boy. And
so school wasn't going to be a good option for James.
Let's see if we can get you back in that line of work. So he introduced me to some people.
James met a man who happened to be opening a new restaurant.
And I ended up going and running that restaurant for him for 10 years.
Oh.
So that was kind of the first step I made out of that. Ended up being a 10-year deal, which was pretty good.
After being in that job for 10 years, James wanted to find a job where he could grow and ended up as an operations manager at FedEx. But that ended up being too labor intensive for his body.
But I kind of got strained with peak season that goes from the second week of November to the first week of January. And you don't get any time off. You work 6 days a week. You work 10 to 12 hours a day. It's very difficult on my body. Like I'll have what I call shutdown days where if I'm just too active, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday comes along and I might be out of bed for 2 hours. I mean, it just happens. It's just like my body just doesn't want to, I can't open a bottle of water. My hands don't work. And I'll be brushing my teeth and I'll drop my toothbrush out of my hand like 4 times just because I can't hold on to it. It makes no sense to me, but it just, every once in a while, my body is just like, gives me the middle finger and says, nope, I'm not working today.
And James is still getting the middle finger from his body. He had to have heart valve surgery in early 2025.
There was complications in the surgery where I ended up internally bleeding. And then for like a couple of weeks, I couldn't breathe. And I kept calling the doctor and being like, I can't breathe. So they take me in there and they put me on like a steroids and some other stuff because they thought I had just some kind of little bit of a, I don't know what they thought I had, inflammation or something like that.
Yeah.
But I was like, guys, I'm telling you, I can't breathe. And so they kept giving me steroids kept giving me steroids. I guess you're not supposed to be on steroids for a long time anyways. And like, we can't give you these anymore. I'm like, well, you got to figure something out. And I said, I'm not lying to you guys. I cannot breathe.
After several tests and several doctors.
So then they sent me to a lung doctor. And the lung doctor is like, you have so much coagulated blood along the whole right side of your chest that your lung can't expand.
And I'm like, I've been telling people I can't breathe.
How did they not see that?
I don't understand it. I don't know. Because he's like, you can see it. I mean, he's like showing me. He's like, it's right here. You can see it clear as day. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I'm like, so what do I have to do? He's like, we have to go in there and do something. So they go in there and it's actually in the inside of your cavity. So it's not in your bloodstream or anything like that. It's just in an open spot. But since it had been there so long and the blood had started to harden, my lungs rubbing on it started to form scar tissue. So what they do is they go in and they peel off layers of your lung to get below the scar tissue so that it can learn to expand again. I'm like, awesome. So I had the surgery on a Monday. I went home on a Wednesday or Thursday. And then Friday, my back started hurting real bad, like my lower back. And then Saturday, it was way worse. And I'm like, man, I just can't really stand up or sit down, or it's like almost on top of my butt. And I'm like, I'm not sure what's going on. And then Sunday, I couldn't stand up anymore. And I started like crawling around on the floor. And so I made it to Monday and I just couldn't move at all. And I was like, I need to go to the emergency room. So I went to the emergency room and they did a CT scan and I had a bunch of blood clots in my vena cava arteries, which are in your like lower abdomen. But during my original accident, they put something in my veins called an IVC filter, which helps keep blood clots from getting to your body because I guess you form a lot of blood clots when you have big accidents like that.
Yeah.
Well, I guess they're supposed to take those out.
Oh.
And they never did. Like, it looks like an octopus, but it's all made out of metal and it just sits in your vein and the metal hooks to your skin like the opposite way, so it's keeps it locked in place.
Uh-huh.
There was getting to be so many blood clots that it was pulling it along like scratch marks and stuff like that.
Oh.
But then the blood couldn't get through, and so I had such bad swelling around my spine, that's why I couldn't walk. But it was because of the, I don't know if it was a good thing or a bad thing it was in there, because I shouldn't have had so many blood clots to start with. And the guy, I ended up going in for emergency surgery. He took it out and he's like, I've never seen blood clots. He's big, this big. He shows me like the pictures of him. I'm like, it's disgusting. I still can't breathe like I did before, but it's better than what it was.
James is currently looking for work again, sort of back to where he started after the accident.
Currently, I'm looking for a job, trying to figure out. I think I'm in a good enough space where I feel comfortable not getting out again. And it's been difficult trying to find a job because I don't know what I can do now, because my body's just slowing down as I get older. I can't do the physical job as much as I want to do. I really wish I would have rethought the schooling thing 20 years ago when they offered me the schooling thing, but I just don't know how it would have worked out. But every job is kind of a sit behind a desk job, and I just can't sit behind a desk.
Yeah.
It's not good for me physically. It's not good for me. And I just can't perform like I want to perform for somebody who employs me.
How do you stay so positive given all this shit that's been thrown at you?
My opinion is I just don't think there's a different way to get through it and still be sane. When I was at the rehab center, there was a gentleman who had come in who had been shot in his back, and he was paralyzed from his waist down. And he would go into his rehab because they made him go to rehab, and he would lay on this big giant bed and he wouldn't do anything. And they would try to work with him like, hey, come on, you know, you just got to stay positive. And he's like, I'm not living in that chair my whole life. And he was just really negative. And they'd do their best they could to, you know, kind of prop him up. And like, I went over there and talked to him a couple times and just kind of like, man, we'll figure this out. He's like, look at me. I'm like, nothing on me works. So we'll figure this out together and get better and stuff like that. And then like 3 days later, he's dead. And I was like, what happened? Like, he seemed fine. And they kind of just, and who knows if it's a myth or whatever, but they just said, you know, if you just lose all will to live, you're just going to die. I said, some people just give up, and it's weird. It's like they just give up on everything and the body just quits.
Mm.
I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. And they said, it happens more than you think. If you don't want to live and you don't want to just keep going, your body will just quit on you.
Yeah.
And so that really stuck with me. And I was like, I'm just not going to stop. I just don't think there's a different way. I just don't think there's another way to do it. And there probably is, but I'm going to stick with my way because right now it's working.
This is Live to Tell. I'm Caitlin Van Maul. You can follow the show on Instagram and TikTok at Live to Tell Podcast. If you enjoy today's episode, please rate, review, and subscribe. It really helps the show. I'll see you in 2 weeks.